Welcome to the Stories of School Leadership podcast, inspirational leaders, shared experiences, creating connections. I'm Emma Lurie and thank you for joining me as I share the journey, stories and inspiration of amazing educational leaders from all around the world. In this week's episode, I'm joined by James Sargent, who is a primary head teacher from a school in Southeast London. It's really fascinating hearing James talk. He shares lots of information about some big change agents out there and organisations that are thinking about the shift that we need to be taking in education. So loads of top tips in this episode and lots of information about James's journey and the challenges that he has faced. So let's get into it. Hi, James. It's so fantastic to have you. Thank you so much for giving up a little bit of your time. I can see that you're in school, so that is really great that you've given up a bit of your time to spend with us. It would be really fab to hear a little bit about you, just you, where you're from, and then we'll get into it.
Brilliant. Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm James Sargent. I'm head teacher at Wyburn Primary School, which has a nursery as well. And we are in the borough of Royal Greenwich, the London borough of Royal Greenwich. And we're in a town called New Eltham, which is about 20 minutes from London Bridge by train. I've been here 9 years as head teacher. It's the best job ever. I love my job, love my time here. Been here for 9 years. Before that, I was a deputy head teacher for 5 years at a school in Lewisham, another London borough. And then before that, I was actually a teacher and assistant head teacher in Greenwich. So I qualified as a teacher in 2002, I think. So yeah, about 22, 23 years I've been doing it. So.
Amazing. Good innings. Congratulations. Well done for sticking it out that long.
Thank you. Cheers.
Oh, fab. Thank you. So I am always really fascinated to find out people's own kind of school experiences and how people got into education to start with. So are you willing to just share with us a bit about your own kind of schooling and how that went for you?
Yeah, definitely. I would say I don't think I enjoyed my primary school that much. I definitely preferred secondary school, and there's lots of different reasons for that. I do remember my first primary school experience. I must have been about five, and I remember being shown around the school. My mum was there, and we walked into the big hall, and there was just loads of children doing PE, and I got a bit freaked out. I got a bit scared. I got a bit nervous because they were all in their underwear, and I think that petrified me, that thought of having to go somewhere and having to do PE in our underwear. Thankfully, we don't do that anymore. So that was my first memory of primary school. I don't think I had a great primary school time. I think there was a bit of bullying, which is never very pleasant. But then as secondary school came up, that definitely, I got into school and I made some really good friends. Secondary school for me is probably more of a highlight than primary school. And I think mainly that's probably down to the teachers, actually, looking back. Secondary school, really great. Lots of people were inspiring me throughout those years at secondary school. And then when I started to think about careers, it must have been at college. And I actually remember seeing a careers advisor. He said to me, it must have been, around A-level time. He said to me, "Oh, what do you feel like doing? What would you like to do?" And I remembered this as something that I would never say to a child. I said to him, "Oh, I'd like to go into media. I'd like to be in video production and TV production." And he said, "Oh, you're about the 40th person that said that today. I hope you realise how competitive that is." And kind of put me off, which was, looking back, isn't very good practice for a careers advisor. But to give him his dues, he did say, "Have you thought about teaching?" And that kind of made me think about teaching, although I wanted to go into video production.
That's some similarity, surely.
Yeah. So I started thinking about teaching and it went from there, really. I got a job as a teaching assistant in a primary school that was quite local before I decided to do my postgraduate certificate. of education that I suppose the year as a teaching assistant kind of confirmed for me that that's the kind of environment I want to work in. Yeah, so that was kind of the beginnings of it.
Amazing. And no having to run around in your pants, which sounds
yeah.
great. When you said that, it reminded me of my secondary school. I mean, it wasn't that long ago. And I remember we were in a city and we used to do cross country down around a race course, and that's where we would run. And if we didn't bring our PE kit, because they were quite short shorts, I think they were probably called like navy blue knickers or something, they would make us run in our pants.
Yeah.
You just could not do that now. You cannot run around a city in your pants. That's
no, it's not appropriate.
Not okay. No. Anyway, so yeah. Moving on. And loads of people talking about, yeah, that kind of careers advice of saying, oh, don't go down that route because it's hard. I mean, we'd be encouraging children to say, absolutely, like, it's challenging and these are the routes you need to take, but follow your dreams. So I guess a good job though, because you are
I think things happen for a reason. So as much as he probably should have got fired for saying it was too competitive, he did point me in a good direction. So
maybe he was good at his job after all. And so do you think when you started out in the teaching element, did you have eyes on leadership at that time, or how did that little nudge into kind of the assistant and then further happen?
Yeah, I don't think when I first started teaching, I didn't think about leadership straight away. I think it just naturally happened, like for most people. I found that I really loved teaching. Then I quickly was asked to mentor students, and I really loved that. And then as a teacher, you get asked to lead specific subjects, and I really enjoyed that. And then I was asked to lead a team, and I really enjoyed that. So it's kind of, and at the same time, and by that time as well, I did start to really enjoy some of the leadership aspects. And I've kind of took ownership as well of my own professional development. I put myself forward a lot for different courses that kind of nurtured that management and those management and leadership skills. And then I can't remember what happened from assistant head to deputy head. I think like lots of people, sometimes these leadership opportunities come to you quite naturally, organically, as things move within a school. But for me, when I was thinking about deputy headship, that wasn't happening. There was a lot of staff that kind of were above me in terms of those opportunities. So I did have to start looking at other schools. And that was really daunting, thinking about the potential of starting a leadership position in a school that's alien to you. Yeah. But I was successful, and I got a deputy head position in a school in Lewisham. Really scared, actually, about that, because like, I didn't know the school, and it was a big step, but it turned out all right. And I was there for 5 years, and the head teacher there was amazing. Learned so much from her, including sharing an office, which really was quite, it's something that probably lots of people don't really think about, but it was really, when I first started, she said to me, I was wondering if she'd show me an office or if the deputy head had an office. And she said to me, oh, would you mind sharing an office with me? And I absolutely didn't have a problem with it. And I said, no, I know, that's absolutely fine. And she said, oh, there is a bit of a thing about it. I said, what? And she said, I just think it's a really good idea, because you get to see how I work and I get to see how you work. And we don't have to worry about trying to find each other in an emergency, or if you're over this side of the school, you're up there and I'm here, we're constantly working with each other. And I did that. And it was so good. I learned so much from just sitting opposite her and observing how she talked to staff, pupils, governors, how she worked. And then she encouraged me to do the MPQH. She actually set up a secondment for me. So I was seconded as a head of school to another school for a term, which was amazing. And then I saw this job advertised and became the head. And when I was the head, first thing I said to the deputy was, do you mind sharing an office?
They go, no, I don't want to share with you.
No, she was equally dumbfounded by it. I was like, sharing office? The head teachers always had their own office, but no, she did it and it's worked out all right. So I've done it ever since. Yeah.
That's really interesting because I've always shared offices. I like people, so I want to be around people. And I've always, I guess, depending on how you are as a leader, for me, it's not very hierarchical. So I like to be around a team of people because I constantly, you know, want to have that conversation, discussion, seek their ideas. So I think I'd feel a bit lonely in an office all by myself. I
need, yeah, it's a bit boring.
Need people around. Yeah. You just got to stay focused though, haven't you? I do love a chat. So that might be an issue. Amazing. It sounds like you've had a really fantastic experience stepping up into that and having lead, you know, being able to work with leaders who elevate you and signpost, because like you say, things do sometimes just come along, but having people around you who are willing to push you forward, because that's a really hard thing as a head to be saying, actually, I've got an amazing team member and I'm going to, you know, push them in a way to leave. It's the right thing to do. And I think, you know, ethically as leaders, it's the right thing that we do, that we grow great people and then we support them to move on. But it's hard because selfishly you just want to keep everybody. So that sounds, yeah, like a very inspiring experience, I guess, that you've had.
Definitely.
This is your 9th year in your current job, and I love that you said that you love it, because there's lots of people at the moment who go, oh, it's really hard. It is really hard, of course it is. Are you willing to tell us a little bit about, we'll get into the great stuff in a minute, but the things that have been really hard and challenging and tough? You've talked about, you know, you didn't necessarily know the school, so that was a new thing, but you've seen, I guess, a lot of change in 9 years, not least COVID, but there's been a lot of other things that have come in.
Yeah.
What are the things that have been tough?
I suppose things that are tough, things that are challenging now. I'm just mindful, I don't want to kind of repeat everything that everyone's saying or things that are in everyone's mind, but they do affect us all. For me, it's obviously budget and finance, and not being able to spend what you need to spend, and having to be really frugal with resources and having to be really creative with staffing, because money is an issue for most schools and for most local authorities and nationally. So for me, that's a constant battle as a head, and that's probably not the fun bit, because obviously I'm not a whiz with finances and things like that, but I've got better at it over the years of doing headship. But it is something that I do find a real challenge and a bit of a block, barriers really to navigate and to try and jump. And then I suppose linked to that is SEND, which again is big and is current and people are talking about it. I've always really strived to have an inclusive school, and that is one of my biggest drivers as a leader, to make the school as accessible and as inclusive as we possibly can. I'm really proud we've got a lot of educational healthcare plans at school, a lot of children with educational healthcare plans. I think we're currently at 26 for a 2-4 entry school, and I think we've got 5 in the pipeline. But obviously with that comes additional pressure in terms of your resources and your financial management and how to allocate things that you haven't got for children that really need it. So that for me, SEND and finance is a huge challenge at the moment. But I am reassured that the government and the local authority are starting to listen and starting to think about the bigger issue and how we can combat it, and that it is a problem, and that there aren't enough places for children in SEND settings. And if it works in a mainstream school and you have got an inclusive philosophy, then schools need the resources to be able to make that setting fit for purpose. So I think finance, SEND, big challenges. And then there's the other one about accountability, really. That's something that I'm really interested in at the moment. And I suppose doing it for 9 years now, I've grown a bit of thicker skin and I'm a bit more maverick, or a bit more harder than I was before. I was quite I was very sensitive at the beginning. I'm still quite sensitive, but I was very sensitive, very nervous at the beginning. Now I'm a bit more, asking questions, wanting to take some risks. And accountability is something I'm really interested in at the moment. And I get really frustrated that many, many schools are still held to account for their test results, and that those results are published. And I can't get my head around Key Stage 2 SATs and why they're still here and how schools are still held account to that. I just think there's better ways of doing things. And I've been asked the question actually, well, what are those ways? What are the better ways of assessing? What are the better ways of doing things? And I'll be honest, I haven't got all of those answers because I don't think any of us have got the magic answer. But what I'm enjoying at the moment is investigating that and getting out and about and learning and talking and networking and seeing that there is a lot of work around assessment and rethinking assessment and really how schools can be held account. I suppose. Yeah, so that's a challenge, but it's also driving me as well.
Yeah, and I think we mentioned a little bit before, we probably started just around that there's a sense, I think, in education that the tides are starting to rumble a little bit, isn't there? There's a feeling of, as we said, there's been a lot of change, there's been a lot of things happening. COVID's been a huge driver in people questioning what are we really doing at times. And I think, you're right. Being in leadership for a little bit longer gives you that ability to really reflect and think about what are the things that are working. And, I'm sure we all recognize need for some sort of systems that are national and work, but actually, certainly with the current financial challenges, that's a massive impact on us. But we need to think bigger, we need to think differently about it. So, share with us a bit then some of the things that you talked about, you're getting out more and networking. What are you seeing that is, I guess, that motivating you and inspiring you and driving you? Because again, being in your job in one school for that block of time, things come round a bit, don't they? They go full circle, but it's so important to keep your eyes outward and external and keep thinking about what else is out there that we can bring in and make new. So what are the things that are inspiring you at the moment?
Definitely. And I do want to say something about COVID, if that's okay as well,
Go
because
for it.
you raised a really good point. And I don't know if there's lots of leaders that feel the same as me, but we often heard, didn't we, just after COVID, that there was this term COVID keeps. What could we keep from COVID? Some of the better lessons. And for me, it was a real, like everybody, it was a huge challenge as a school leader, and a challenge for everybody. And I'm the first to admit that was probably my lowest of my head teacher career in terms of my own mental health and how I navigated that and how we looked after the school during that time. But I think that has also made me a lot more confident, and has made me a stronger leader and has made me question more. And like I said to you before, the fact that we had all of that time as head teachers, to run the school without any assistance or any proper guidance, because none of us knew what we were doing, it kind of elevated my confidence and realized that there is a big space for autonomy at our level, and that kind of pushed me out really to get out and about and to see what's going on. And some of the things that I'm being inspired about at the moment is the work of the Chartered College of Teaching, around rethinking the curriculum and their rethinking projects. I'm involved with Big Education at the moment that seem to be really leading the way in terms of getting messages heard where they matter and looking at how to influence and change policy and change existing models.
And that work sounds really fascinating. Tell us a bit more about Big Education, what that is. And I've certainly sort of seen things on LinkedIn and I've seen some of the online work that they're doing, but it would be great to know a bit more about.
So Big Education is an academy trust, and our school isn't part of the academy trust, but they do offer some really good continued professional development. I mean, you can check them out online, but there's all different ways you can become involved with them. They've got some really good research and reading materials that are really helpful. I'm currently on their Big Leadership Adventure, which is a training program. You can anybody can join the training program, so do check that out. And also there is something called the Big Eight as well, where they've devised kind of eight different leadership models that they feel benefit schools and leaders. So it's definitely worth checking out. But for me, they're a voice at the moment that seems to be at the forefront. This week, I was fortunate enough to go to the House of Commons to listen to the launch of one of their papers. There were some people there that needed to hear what was being said and needed to be listened. And they're very much thinking about the curriculum, accountability, assessment, development of staff, all of those big themes that need to be looked at and need to be changed.
Sounds great. And it is so fantastic to hear about organizations like Big Education and there are other things like FED are doing some really great work that are out there that are helping that tide shift, aren't you? We said sometimes as a leader it can feel lonely.
Yeah.
But you start to question whether some of the things that the questioning sats, it's so ingrained in the way that we work because you have to do it and it's statutory. Mm-hmm. That, I certainly remember feeling that, am I the only one questioning some of these ideas? And so to hear that there are big organisations out there absolutely standing up and being heard is it feels positive, doesn't it?
And I think the more people that are aware of these organisations, I mean, the ones that you've mentioned and we've mentioned, FED and Big Education, I know they're really open for people to join them and for people to communicate and for people to share. So it's not money making or anything like that. It really is an honest forum where there's people that want to change things. So anybody can go along, anybody can join, anybody can read what they're doing, anybody can share what they're doing. And they've got some really good ideas.
Yeah.
So it's quite exciting being part of that.
Amazing. And tell me a bit more about sort of the things that you were doing in your school that are, again, it's about, you said you love what you do, so share with us some of the things that kind of keep you motivated day to day and the things you're, I guess, excited about in your own setting.
Yeah, I think for me the things I love about my job is obviously the children and the people. That's what makes me really enjoy coming to work. I love the team, I love the children. We're probably doing just as many amazing things as everybody else, because I speak to lots of colleagues, go to lots of schools. Schools are amazing places. They're innovative, they're constantly changing and trying new things. And our school is exactly like that. One of the biggest interests I have is curriculum and curriculum innovation and exploring ways of engaging the pupils more and looking at how we can teach things differently. So we've done a lot of work here on project-based learning, which isn't a new concept, but is something that we're really proud of and that we celebrate and I really encourage. We're looking at immersive learning, which is all kind of takes its theme from immersive theatre. And we're looking at coming out of the classroom and exploring different places to learn and encouraging the children to be immersive in that. So lots of schools have forest schools like us that we utilize. Lots of schools have DT rooms or libraries or IT suites. We've actually got a museum at our school, which is quite unique. And that is an immersive space. That is a space that's shared by the whole school, that teachers and classes visit throughout the week, and is a different environment to learn in. It's a magic museum. Lots of magical things happen in it. Lots of myth is associated with it. So it, for us, it's not only a learning space that is immersive, that isn't the classroom, but it's also a really good place to start projects and to hook imagination and to hook ideas. And all of that really has been inspired by Punch Drunk. So again, if you want to, if you want some new curriculum ideas and different ways of exploring the curriculum, do check out Punch Drunk Enrichment. They're linked to the Immersive Theatre Company, but they have got some fantastic CPD, some fantastic messages around how to engage the pupils and how to enthuse the teachers. Yeah, really quality stuff.
That sounds amazing. What child doesn't want to go to school where there's a magic museum? And to be fair, what staff member doesn't want to work somewhere that's got that? That sounds so fantastic.
Yeah, you can. There is a video on the website of our school website if you wanted to look at it. But if you wanted to visit it, you're most welcome. You can always come along to the museum. It's called the Museum of Everything, but you have to be prepared because it is quite a magical space. Lots of strange things happen in there.
Sounds fantastic. I think that's part of what is so great about hearing different people's voices from across the country, and we've got people from across the world as well joining at different parts in the podcast. But just, yeah, that everyone's so welcoming and open in education, aren't they? It's not, nothing's closed doors or we're doing this but not you. It's so lovely to hear leaders that I speak to go, yeah, come and have a look, or give me a call, or pop me an email, which, and that's so important. That helps tackle that kind of lonely, oh my gosh, what are we doing?
Yeah.
Part of it. So that's amazing. Thank you so much. It's been fantastic to talk to you. Before we finish, I would really love just to find out a bit more about, I guess, a bit more about your vision for the future, some of the things that you think might be coming along for you, or, you know, you've talked a bit about your involvement with kind of big education and that. What does the next, I don't know, maybe not 9 years, but 5 years or so kind of hold for you and your school, or?
Yeah.
Relevant.
For me, vision, it's another shout out, really. And it's a shout out to teachers. I think they're the most amazing people on the planet, and teaching assistants. Anybody that teaches children and young people are amazing. And my vision, really, and something that I really want to try and fight for, work on, is really kind of reprofessionalizing, if that's a word, that
it is now.
Reprofessionalizing the profession of teaching, the vocation of teaching, and kind of when you compare how teachers are held in regard in other countries, We seem to have lost that, unfortunately, in our country. And teachers, yeah, they are amazing. It's an amazing career. It should deserve to be up there as one of the in terms of its professionalism. So that is, for me, a bit of a personal mission, is to try and look at ways of how we can re-professionalize the profession and attract the right people into the profession, and attract people into the profession. And when I mentioned teaching assistants, again, big shout out to them, because that is a huge workforce that came into their own during COVID, that are skilled, that are experienced, that could also and should be encouraged to join the teaching profession and encouraged to up level and their skills. We need more teachers. But definitely a mission of mine is to reprofessionalise the teaching role.
Yes, it's going to be a quote now. You're right. It's fascinating, isn't it, hearing about, yes, in different cultures and different ideas around how teachers are thought about, both internally in the profession of education, but all and the sector, I guess, but also from a families and a parental perspective. And I remember hearing a lot of people during COVID, a lot of families saying, oh my gosh, the respect for educators really elevated at that time, because suddenly families at home were thinking, oh my gosh, this is so hard. You know, the times, I think I've got two girls at home, keeping them safe, and I'm not trying to educate them necessarily. I mean, wider world I am. It's so hard. And then, you know, we think what you're trying to do in a classroom, or, you know, in leadership roles, what you're trying to do with huge amount of children in our settings, it's such a complex and challenging role. And yeah, I wholeheartedly support that vision that we need to really recognize how complex the job is, and that it deserves that recognition, that financial reward, that support, that those CPD routes. So yeah, I think that's a great vision to have. I can't wait to see what the next nine years holds in that way. Amazing. Thank you so much for your time, James. It's been so fantastic. I will get some way sort of out on LinkedIn and everything, just sharing some of the links and things that you've talked about, because they sound like really fascinating and insightful things for people to have a little look at if they've not heard of them before.
Brilliant. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to the Stories of School Leadership podcast. We'd love to know your thoughts on this episode. Get in touch and tell us what you think, and share this episode with colleagues so we can spread the word. If you'd like some support with leadership coaching, supervision or consultancy, you can get in touch with me via the Stories of School Leadership Instagram account, or I'm Emma Lurie on LinkedIn, or you can send me an email. It's info@emmalurie.co.uk. I hope you have a great day, whatever you're up to next, and I can't wait to share the next episode with you. Goodbye.